Morning, church. Stay in 1 Kings chapter 18. Our text will and our study will come from that this morning. But we've been looking at Elijah over the last few weeks, and I hope that we've seen some interesting principles that God has shared with us, and I hope that we've been empowered by them. We've seen exactly what the man or the woman of God needs to be like. We've also seen how sometimes God can use our circumstances in order to take us to the next stage or phase within our walk with Him. And sometimes it can be very uncomfortable, sometimes it's things that we don't want to do, but ultimately it's for our benefit. And so here we find in chapter 18, we find it's 3 years later from the first message that Elijah brings to Ahab, and that is that there's going to be drought. And as we look at chapter 18 here, verses 1 and 2, what we find here is that God says that he needs to go and approach Ahab now and tell him that there's going to be rain and it's going to come on the earth. But what we're going to look at this morning is just the two attitudes of the two men. See, we're going to look at Elijah and then we're going to look at Obadiah. And as we've seen over and over again, that Elijah has been truly a man of God. He has not questioned God. He has just followed God every single way. And there's some serious faith that is shown in this man. And I wonder if we looked at ourselves this morning, if we began to paint this picture of our walk with God, what would it be like? What would we see? Would we be like Elijah, who would just go and trust in God and know that God is the one who's sustaining him and bringing about provision? Or would we constantly question him and, God, why this? How is this going to work? Are you sure this is what you want to do? Is that us this morning? Or do we see ourselves as an Elijah? An individual who would go out, no matter what, trusting God each step of the way, and know that God will provide no matter what. Church, you still with me? All right, let's get to the text. So we see that Elijah is a man of God, and then Obadiah, what we're going to find is that he's an individual who really makes a claim to being a man of God. And I wonder this morning, as we look at a few things, I wonder which individual you could relate to this morning. Let's look at verses 1 and 2 of chapter 18, book of 1 Kings. Now it happened after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, "Go show yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the face of the earth." So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab, and now this famine was severe in Samaria. I want you to understand something here, is that the reason that Elijah could go and face Ahab after everything that he's been through is purely because of his faith, his belief in who God is. So he understands who his commander is. And if I had to ask you a question this morning, do you know who your commander is, church? Church, that was the question. Do you know who your commander is? And if you understand who your commander is, will you be obedient to him, no matter what? Elijah understood who God is, just as Moses did in Exodus chapter 3, just as Joshua did, just as David did, just as all the great men and women of God knew. They understood who God is. And because they understood who the commander is, they understood this rank, they understood what it meant to be subject to or to be submissive to God, they were able to achieve greatness. I think our biggest problem today is we forget this ranking system. We forget that it's God, Him alone, and then it's us. Church, you still with me? And this is what the biggest problem is in our walk today, is that so often we say that, yes, I believe in God and He's my Lord and etc., etc. But the show of that is not that at all. In fact, the show is I'm God, and I do as I please, and I get what I want, no matter what. And yet God is always calling for a heart of submissiveness. That's what was the difference between the great men and women of God and what the world represents today. But notice that he understands his commander, but he also obeys the command. Look at what the text says in verse 1. It happened after many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah. So God spoke to Elijah. Then the text goes on and says, "Go show yourself to Ahab." This is the command. So remember in the beginning, he told Elijah, chapter 17, "Go and take a message to Ahab." Then after that, he takes Elijah and he basically hides him away for a time of training and preparation. And now he says, "Go show yourself to Ahab." Understand that Ahab's been looking for him over the last 3 years. Okay? understand that there's a hit out on him. That the minute he sees him, he's going to want to kill him. So it takes a lot of boldness here to go and face this enemy. Someone who you know, the minute you're in his presence, he could destroy you. But does Elijah ever question God? Church, do you see that in the text? Does he ever say, God, hold up. Do you remember who Ahab is? Do you remember where you're sending me? No, you see, in chapter 17, he's already sent him out into the land. A land that belongs to Ahab, where everyone is looking for him. And God protected him in this land. Remember, we looked at that last week? And so he understands and he can see the power and the presence of God within his life. If I had to ask you this morning, do you see the power and the presence of God in your life? Your response would be, church? Of course it's going to be yes, right? Because that's the textbook answer. And we know that. Yet how do we live? We live in such a way that it doesn't show that he's present. That we believe we're under his provision and his protection. Just think about the way you live. And so we see that he understands the command. He understands who the commander is. And this brings about a serious comfort to Elijah. Look at what verse 2 says. So Elijah went to show himself to Ahab. Why does he do this? Do you remember Romans 8:28, church? Church, do you remember Romans 8:28? Do you know what it says? We know the text very well. We quote it. Not even having to think about it. Because it's a text that is drummed into our heads over and over again. A text that needs to bring comfort to us. Think about some of the other texts that brings comfort to us about our status with regard to God. 2 Corinthians 5:21. That we are God's righteousness in Jesus. Still with me? Think about some of the texts like Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10 that tells us if we continue to be faithful, we will receive the crown of church? The crown of life. So in God there's always blessing, but he's demanding our faithfulness. He wants our faith, he wants our obedience. And that results in what you and I can define this morning as faithfulness. Think about Abram in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Go there with me this morning. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. And it's God's call to Abraham to leave his place of security. Now the Lord said to Abraham, go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house, to the land which I will show you. So in other words, he didn't know where he was going, church. Understand that. God just calls him and says, I'm going to show you a land. Leave, go. Verse 2 says, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. Verse 3, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse, and in you all families of the earth will be blessed. I want you to understand that whenever we are faithful and obedient to God, there's blessing every single time. We know this, because we know that when we've been faithful and we've acted in submissiveness or subjection to God, blessing comes. It's a tough time or a tough period that we may go through, but at the end, there's a blessing, right, church? And this is what we've got to be focused on day in and day out. I want you to think of some of the great men that God commanded to go forth and do certain things, that they didn't know what the outcome would be. Think about Joshua when they went for Jericho in Joshua chapter 6. It was a fortress that had never been penetrated. And yet it's these individuals who are going into this land. They spied it out years prior to that, 40 years prior to that. They've seen that there's giants in the land. That was the report that came back. And now God's telling them that they must go forth and claim the land. They don't know what the outcome's going to be, right? Church? We do, as we read the text, we see the big picture. And even when God calls us today and he asks us to go forth or go into an area that we're totally unfamiliar with, what is our response generally to him? Hold up. Let's just reassess this. Let's just relook at it. Let's just replan it. Or do we focus on the fact that he's God? He knows who we are. He knows where he's taking us. And there's blessing that will come from that. John 14:15. If you love me, you'll obey my commandments. So we see that there's a faith within Elijah that is incredible. There's a faith here that he's prepared to show. There's a faith that brings about boldness in him, that he's able to take on whatever comes his way. And this is because he truly understands who God is. He gets how big God is. He gets that God is God. And he gets that God has not let him down thus far. In fact, everything that God has told him to do and that he's done has brought about blessing and come true. So God's giving him no reason to ever doubt him. And my question to you this morning, has God given you any reason to doubt him? Church, has he given you any reason to doubt him? Yet what do you and I do constantly? You see, the reality to us always is what's going on. We don't see the bigger picture. We don't see that God's in control. And we mentioned last week that we put so much of our trust in the circumstances instead of the God who controls those circumstances. Let's look at verse 3 and 6 now, the book of 1 Kings 18. So we see the attitude of Elijah. Now let's look at Obadiah for just a second. Verse 3 and following. Ahab called Obadiah, who was over the household. Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. For when Jezebel destroyed the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and provided them with bread and water. Then Ahab said to Obadiah, go through the land to all the springs of water, to all the valleys. Perhaps we will find grass and keep the horses and mules alive and not have to kill some of the cattle. 6. So they divided the land between them to survey it. Ahab went one way by himself and Obadiah went another way by himself. What I want to show you here is simply this, is that this individual is an individual who chooses to worship God in secret. You with me, church? Notice what the text says in verse 4. It says that he feared God. In fact, the original text brings about the idea that he revered God. He had a deep respect for who God is. You with me? He was in awe of Yahweh. And that's what the text reveals to us. And then it tells us why he feared God. It says that he saved the prophets, some of the prophets that Jezebel was going out and killing. Understand who he's working for as well. He's working for the enemy. But he's serving God in secret. And there's a secret that he's not brought about to them. Because if they had known that he serves God, do you think he would have been serving them, church? Not at all. Would he still be alive? Not at all. Based on what was going on. So here's an individual who fears God, or says he fears God, but what is his action? He's living a life of total silence. He's worshiping God in his little room, in his little corner, and that's about as far as it goes. That's the testimony that he would bring to the world. What does that say to the rest of the world about the God that you serve, if that is the extent of your relationship and walk with God? Church, you still with me? What message does it bring to the world? Well, first of all, you're saying that my God's not big enough. I'm not proud enough to have enough trust in my God to be able to worship freely, irrespective of what may not happen to me. You're also sending a message to the world that God works on my time. Right? And so the impression that we give the world is that God is there for our benefit. God's our get-out-of-jail-free card. He's our joker in the pack, etc., etc. We'll pull him out when we need him, when we're in desperation. I'll worship him when it's convenient for me. And this is what's happening over here. Church, I hope you see this. Let's go back to the text. And so the question this morning is this truly true devotion? He feared the Lord greatly. Why? He feared God because he hid a couple of prophets away? Does that make an individual a Christian? Does that make someone faithful? Does that make someone revere God because he hid a couple of prophets away? Because we did one or two good deeds, does that make us men and women of God? Church, I think not. I think there's so much more behind our worship and our testimony than just doing a couple of good deeds here and there.
Look at verse 4. For when Jezebel destroyed the prophets of the Lord, Obadiah took 100 prophets, hid them by 50s in a cave, and provided them with bread and water. How many of us who look at this would consider this to be a good deed, as we've mentioned? Go with me to Mark chapter 8 now.
Many of us would consider this to be a good deed. And I want to agree this morning as well with that. However, good deeds are not enough. God requires what? Faith and obedience. Say that with me, church. Faith and obedience. That is what God requires from us. And obedience to what point? To the point of death. That's the example of Jesus, is it not?
Let's go to Mark chapter 8 now. And let's read verses 34 through to 38. And he summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross and follow me.
Church, what does it mean to deny yourself? You with me? What does it mean to deny yourself? It means that I will put aside my wants, my desires, and I'm going to put God first, no matter what the cost. Still with me? It means that although I'm so desiring to want to go in a specific direction, I know that God is calling me this way. So I will put all my plans on hold, I will set them aside, because I want my will to be aligned with God's will. And once that happens, there's blessing. Psalm 37:4 says what? Commit your ways to the Lord, and He will give you the desires of it. Church, are you still with me? And He will give you the desires of your heart.
Because your will is aligned with His will. Let's read on in the text, verse 35. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake in the Gospels will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? 37. For what will a man give in exchange for his soul?
Church, let me ask you, what price can you put on your soul this morning? How much money? Give me a figure here, church. Are we scared to take a shot at this, church? How much money? How much materialism is your soul worth this morning? How much of your desire is your soul worth this morning, church? Church? That's exactly the response that I have for this morning. Because we can't put a price on our soul. Nothing is worth the cost of eternity, church. Nothing. I don't know about you, but I wish to see God on that final day. Either when I breathe my last breath, or if I'm still alive when He comes. But the motivation is to spend eternity with Him. Still with me? And there's nothing on this earth
that can equal eternity with God. No matter what we think, no matter how we feel, no matter how gratified we are for a period of time. 38, and this is the key verse here. For whoever is ashamed of me, in other words, that word can also be translated as being despised. Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of him when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Remember Matthew 7:21 through 23? Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father. I want you to understand as we look at verse 34 and following, there's a specific pattern that God plans out for us here. He tells us there's something that you and I are pursuing daily, and that's about being a testimony for Him. It's about proclaiming who you are, being bold about the faith that you chose. And notice the word I use, chose. You chose Him, just as He chose you before the beginning of time. But
But if you're not so sure about whether you chose him or not, let's just see quickly, how many of us are baptized here? Let's just show our sign of hands. Don't be scared. We won't throw you out. Now, when you were baptized, was anyone holding a gun to your head, church? Church? Did anyone write you a threatening letter that if you don't do this, we're going to kill your family, church? Or if you don't do this, are we going to do X, Y, and Z? So the question really is here, did anyone force you into the waters of baptism, church? No, we chose that, didn't we? Because we understood our position with regard to who God is. So we chose him. And as we chose him, God asks us now to be a testimony to him and proclaim him. In other words, when any opportunity arises for you to be a testimony, it's that you speak for him. Amen? That you speak for him. And you no longer keep quiet and allow people to say what they want to say, but you speak up. And that you're no longer ashamed, because there's a penalty that comes with that. Let's go back to chapter 18 now, 1 Kings. So as you look at verse 5 and 6, we see that Obadiah is in the service of evil people. Individuals who he knows what they're about. Because of the expense of maybe his job, his status, his position. Notice that he governed the household of Ahab. He was not prepared. Look at verse 7. Now Obadiah was on the way. Behold, Elijah met him and he recognized him and fell on his face and said, "Is this you, Elijah, my master?"
Is Elijah his master, church? Or is Ahab his master?